stood around, performing a ceremony. Pindor was clearly close to death. One of the cultists turned and saw Kools. He cried out in alarm. In an instant, the 20 ritual heathens turned and pulled out automatic weapons, blasting up at the silo's entrance aperture that framed the iron snake. Kools slammed down his visor and waded into the chamber, percussive rounds pinging off his power armor. He opened fire, swinging his bolt gun, exploding one cultist after another. When he reached the crucifix, he used his blade to cut Pindor down and pulled his naked, limp form into his embrace.
"I'll get you out of here, brother," Kools said.
It wasn't going to be that easy. Chapter 6. As Inquisitor Mabuse later concluded in his summation of the Serra's outbreak, the main cult center was Hecate Township, and not Nibarna at all. When the main uprising in Nibarna was overthrown, the cultists had left deliberate traces to draw the Iron Snakes to the remote Harvest Town, where they intended to perform a sacrifice. The beast that Kools had killed, that had just been a diversion, a guardian force summoned forth from the warp to keep the Marines busy. Hecate and its people, all converted to the Khorne belief, wanted an Astartes as a sacrifice. If they could ritually spill the blood of one of the Emperor's own, they could vouch a spell that would crack open the heavens and let loose an avatar of damned Khorne himself. Priad led his detail through the streets to support Kools, and they found themselves attacked from all sides by the very farmers they had sworn to save. For the first time in his life, Brother Sergeant Priad realized he was going to have to break a sworn pledge. The cultists, who but minutes before had seemed to be ailing farm workers eager for help, came at them from all sides. They were feral, insane.
"Kill them! Kill them all!"
Priad told his men as they fought towards the silo. Their armor and their bolters were a match for the superior numbers of the cultists, but barely. Andromach lost a finger to an auto round. Xander fell and was beaten half to death with plowshares before Natus pulled him free. Cylon took a scythe blade in the arm and bled for weeks. The rampaging cultists overwhelmed the rhino in the main street. Calignes, weak from blood loss, had almost passed out. They set it ablaze and ripped him limb from limb. Memnes fell without a sound, a bullet through his exposed face. Priad reached the silo and slaughtered the cultists around them. He was as red with blood as with rain. He reached Kools and helped him drag Pindor clear. Then, with his power claw blazing, he set about finishing the grim business, revoking his pledge and killing the traitorous farmers rather than saving them. At dawn the next morning, he was done. Memnes, Calignes, and Ilias were dead. So were 470 cultists. A victory, of sorts. It didn't feel that way to Priad. He ignored Inquisitor Mabuse's attentions as he led his battered squad into its departure shuttle.
"You have done a fine job, Priad. The Emperor will laud you."
Mabuse's voice was as lofty as ever.
"I walked my men into a trap you should have seen, Inquisitor," Priad replied as the hatches closed. "Next time, Emperor willing, you will do better."
The hatches slammed, bearing their noble dead. Damocles left Ceres and returned to the void of space. Below them, unceasingly, the blood-red rain fell. Part 5. Crimson Wake, Ithaca. Chapter 1. Ithaca. Proud Ithaca. Ocean world, cradle of snakes. The armored dropship turns like a comet in high altitude, streaming fire like a falling star. On its white-hot hull, the double-looped serpent insignia of the Iron Snakes chapter glows, incandescent. Priad unlocked his seat restraints and lumbered in full armor to the nearest porthole. He stood with his hands braced against the hull wall, either side of the port. Beneath him, through the luminous streams of re-entry fire, he saw the oceans, the dark tumult of vast cold water, the thrashing frenzy of the deep Ithacan seas. The dropship swooped, leveled, and ceased to burn. It skimmed low over the ocean face, assailed by hurricane salt winds and kilometer-high waves. Soinene, the folding wall of iron, bane of every worm hunter. Priad saw the bright reflection of the racing dropship flashing off the dimpled, roiling darkness below. He saw Marise, the white water foam. He saw the boiling cauldrons of Ulbrumid, the worm spore. Ithaca. Proud Ithaca. Ocean world. Cradle of snakes. They would be making planetfall soon, in a minute or two. Time for the squad leader to unscrew the copper flask and make the rite of the giving of water. Priad had not been home for 10 years, and this was home. This was Ithaca. Salt water ran from his eye corners. The rite had begun. Removing his glove, Priad wiped the tears from his eyes and marked the emblem of the iron snakes on the bulkhead. His men watched him do it. Sometimes the rite was special. Sometimes you didn't need the flask. The dropship streaked west across the sky like a tracer round, over the fishing village and orb groves of the archipelagos, basking in the sun, out towards the stilt rocks of the Primarch's causeway. These great towers of rock rose from the water like spines in a 288-kilometer curve where the archipelagos met the open ocean. Priad had already given the dropship's pilot instructions. The ship slowed, adjusted, and hove down towards Sulla's Rock, a 30-meter stack dominating the trailing western lines of the causeway. Ocean-faring hookbeaks and smaller littoral scale birds burst from their roosts on the stack at the shrill sound of the dropship's downjets. They mobbed and circled, clacking bills and crying into the wind, the sunlight flashing off their gray flight scales. White water boomed and erupted around the stack's base. The dropship shuddered and settled on the flat top of the stack, its three landing claws extended and firm. The hatch opened with a clank, flooding the cabin with cold sea air and the boom of the ocean. They felt it on their faces. All of Damocles' squad were unhelmed. Priad led them out into the buffet of the stack top. As one, they breathed in the clean metallic stir of the open water. It was overwhelmingly intense. For long periods of time, their senses had been siphoned through the relay systems of their armor. Now they were exposed, raw, in the wind. The olfactory receptors built into their skulls amplified the sense of the place a millionfold. Priad sighed. He could smell the ozone in the fleeting wind, the lime stink of the scale bird's guano. He could detect the aroma of saline mucus in the bivalves clamped to the stack's base, the oil slick of a sounding roccolo shoal 10 kilometers out, and the citrus in a glass of grain alcohol poured 20 kilometers away in a waterside tavern in the archipelago. Too much. Priad crunched across the salt-encrusted rock to the lip. Below him, at his toes, a giddying drop to the water. Hookbeaks turned and banked in the rising spray, cutting through the brief rainbows the vapor made. He looked back to his men. Cools, Xander, Pindor, Natus, Andromach, with the snake standard flapping between his shoulder blades, and Cylon. The pilot and his assistant had also emerged from the dropship, kneeling a little way behind the main group to show their respects.
In the name of the Primarch who sired us, in the name of the chapter which binds us, in the name of the God Emperor who rules us, in the name of Ithaca, let this which was Ithaca's be Ithaca's again.
Priad unstoppered his copper flask and let the last of the water trickle out. The spattering droplets fell away down the side of the stilt, twinkling in the sun. This was the rite of returning. Every iron snake carried a flask of sacred life water from his homeworld to anoint his actions across the galaxy. For the life water comes from the ocean, and the ocean is the blood of the Emperor. Now, on returning, what little remains must be given back. One by one, the men stepped to the brink and poured the contents of their own flasks away. When all had finished, Priad, Andromach, and Xander returned to the edge and emptied three flasks whose owners had not made it home. The life waters of Calignes, Ilias, and beloved Memnes. Then Cools, Cylon, and Natus stepped forward, bringing the Eusippus, the copper urns. As the oldest of Damocles, this last duty fell to hawk-eyed Pindor, not the sergeant. As Priad intoned the lament of Dice, Pindor unscrewed the lid of each Eusippus in turn and shook out the grey ash. Soft, loose, light, it sieved away into the wind and returned like the water to the sea. They could smell it, microscopic motes on the wind, the smell of death and glory. Calignus, Ilius, Memnes. Fallen to the arch-enemy on Ceres. Gone, but never forgotten. In his armor's hip pouch, Priad had the prepared statement of their lives, actions, and deaths, sealed and ready to be placed into the archive of the chapter house.
Look,
said Pindor, catching Priad's arm.
Look, there.
Out beyond the stilts, barely a kilometer distant, the ocean boiled and seethed.
All brumid. Worm spore.
The great whirl was midnight black under the churning froth of white water. Thousands of seabirds wheeled and spiraled above the massive upsurge. For a moment, one great serpent coil broke the froth, horn plate dazzling as it caught the light. Then it was gone, the old brumid fading, and the seabirds dispersing.
A good sign, a good omen, said Pindor.
Priad nodded. The great snakes of Ithaca had taken back their own. Chapter 2
You have performed the due rituals?
Asked Lexicanium Phrastus. Priad nodded.
Sir, the rite of returning is done. This morning on the homeworld below. We went there directly before coming here.
I see.
Phrastus walked round to his writing lectern and took a holoquill from the energy well.
Their names?
Priad had been gazing out of the tower chamber's pressurized window, looking across the rock-crete fortifications and the barren crags of the moon to where Ithaca, green-white, was rising over the horizon.
Names?
Of the fallen, sergeant.
Ah,
Priad sighed.
Calignus, Ilius, Memnes.
The Lexicanium wrote the names down.
Any record of deeds?
Priad took the sealed scroll from his hip pouch and handed it to the Lexicanium.
Full orders of merit, in detail, and all particulars. They all have my highest commendation.
These will be catalogued.
Priad unslung the Narthesium from his shoulder and placed it on a side table. Inside, in self-locking sterilized tubes, lay the precious progenoid glands taken from the fallen. With Memnes dead, Priad had been forced to cut the glands out himself. Phrastus rang a bell and summoned apothecaries to take the Narthesium away.
You will need new blood,
said Phrastus, setting aside his quill and coming to join Priad.
Yes. Captain Phobor has asked me to personally assist in your selection.
I am honored, sir.
I have prepared a list of fratry petitioners, all of them new recruits of the highest quality. They are itching for selection into an active squad, and Damocles has a worthy reputation.
I am glad of that, sir.
You lost your apothecary, didn't you?
Memnes.
Yes, sir. That is the hardest choice in my experience. There are two promising candidates, both newly raised to that rank. Psychon and Ibos. I'm sure one or other will suit your needs.
I'm sure, sir. But I was hoping for Chiron. I heard what happened in Kozan. I thought,
Chiron? Oh, no, no. I'm sorry, brother. That just won't be possible.
Priad looked around. The scent of the chapter house seemed suddenly intensely sterile and cold.
Not possible.
The Emperor grant you grace,
said the Lexicanium.
A welcome back to Charybdis, brother.
Charybdis. Fortress Moon. Chapter House. Barefoot and dressed in a loose white chiton, Priad stood on the marble deck of the observation platform at the summit of the chapter house's fortress. From here, he could see out across the mighty defences of the Iron Snake's bastion, across the sloped turrets of the primary emplacements, the massive curtain walls the hard-point blisters of the void batteries like sea urchins. He could smell stone, promethium, physoline, oils. The crude power. This was where the Iron Snake's legacy took flesh, and from here they marched out to conquer the stars in the Emperor's name. Priad had spent 2 hours in the Armadrome with his men as chapter functionaries slowly removed and blessed every segment of their Mark VII battle plate and took it away for overhaul and repair. Then an hour soaking in the warm baths of the Balneary in deep dishes sculpted from the polished coil plates of great worms. Then the plunge pools and the cold scrubs, the brusque ministrations of the wooden Thrixus to purge and scruff the skin and exoskeleton, the application of warm, glossy orb oil, the salving of sore body plugs and inflamed biolink sockets. Their hair had been oiled, combed out and coiled, their faces shaved and smeared with depilatory wax. All Iron Snakes in the regular troop levies were clean-shaven. The wax treatment kept their faces smooth for years at a time. The irritation of bristles and whiskers growing under a full-face helmet that might be worn for months at a time was considered a distraction from the focus of combat. Washed, oiled, scrubbed, anointed, Priad felt cleaner and rawer than he had in years. His skin tingled. The perfume from the oils and unguents adorning him seemed noxiously sweet. They assaulted his armorless, superhuman senses, sickly, invasive. And he felt light, superhuman, like he could jump up, break through the sky with his hands, and never come down. He hadn't realized what a weight the armor had become, no matter the strength and invincibility it gave him in battle. He had become used to its burdensome weight and the focusing muzzle it had put on his senses. In truth, he had not been out of armor for any real length of time, in 10 years. 10 years ago, he had stood on this very deck, similarly robed and similarly cleansed. He had gazed out over the fortress of Charybdis and rejoiced. He had been Troop Brother Priad, newly selected for Damocles by Sergeant Raphon and Apothecary Memnes. Now he was back again, as Brother Sergeant Priad in Raphon's place. And Memnes, too, was dead. Priad was painfully aware of the way honor had passed into his hands. He looked down at them, surprised to see them human and bare. It felt wrong that the great power claw wasn't clenching as he closed his hand. He had held the squad together well since Raphon's death. They had taken victories on Ceres and Idon, though Ceres had been especially bitter. Now he had to remake it. Almost a third of the squad had to be reselected and inducted. Priad looked up at the stars, as he often did when in search of guidance, no matter what part of the galaxy he found himself in. He didn't know even half the names. That was the job of a librarian or an apothecary. But he usually found meaning in their display and formation. The God Emperor of mankind was in the stars, in every one of them, after all. Directly above him was the tight band of the Reef Stars, the linear constellation to which Ithaca belonged. Though the Iron Snakes travelled far and wide in the service of the Emperor, this cluster was their particular battleground. Since the start of Imperial time, the Chapter had policed the Reef Stars and undertaken to keep them safe, especially against the influx of the Dark Eldar, their oldest enemy.
"Sometimes the great old worms will submerge for years at a time," said a low voice. "But not so deep as your thoughts now, boy."
Priad turned and immediately dropped to his knees. There was a sudden saintly odor of power and electrical machines.
"Chapter Master," he gasped, making the sign of the Aquila.
"Get up, boy. The Emperor, in his wisdom, gave you sturdy legs, so use them."
Priad rose slowly, his head down.
"Look at me, Priad."
Priad gradually raised his head. Chapter Master Sadon was just a shadow, robed, mysterious, and towering. His cloak was made of broken, polished wormhorn pieces, linked together like a jigsaw puzzle by gold wire. Slow respiration throbbed from the exchanger tanks under his cloak. His head was cowled, but there was a suggestion of inner light coming from where his eyes should have been. He was a good meter taller than Priad.
Master, there are many things an Iron Snake might be allowed to fear, boy. The massed legions of the arch-enemy, the hordes of the green pigs, the swarms of the accursed hives. But I am not one of them. Slow your pulse and your breathing, Priad. Be calm.
I had not expected to see you, Lord.
I make it a point to see those snakes who return after a long absence, especially those I am fond of. Damocles' squad. Now, I've been fond of that ever since I told Damocles to form it. One of the finest war squads this chapter has ever produced. One of the notables, right up there with Thebes, Veii, Parthus, and dear, brave Scipio. And you, Priad, you're Damocles now.
Yes, Lord.
Petrarch spoke well of you. On Idon, you impressed him. And it takes a lot to impress my illustrious librarian.
I am not worthy, Lord.
They tell me Memnos is dead. I will lament that in the temple. A great loss.
Lord.
Who else?
Calignus. Ilias.
Calignus. I always liked him. Had an air of old fierce about him. The way he carried himself. Ilias. Now he had the mark of a leader on him. Might have led a squad of his own one day.
Priad was quietly amazed. Though the fratry numbered 1,000 marines, the chapter master spoke as if he knew every one of them personally.
You'll miss the men most, in the long run,
said Satan.
Sir?
A great man like Memnos, everyone will mourn. That'll make the loss easier. But Calignus, Ilias. In my experience, a squad leader will miss the common troopers most. No one mourns them in quite the same way as a squad commander who misses their nuances and moves.
I'm sure, Lord. But Memnos is a great loss to me.
Naturally. You've thought about a replacement?
Priad nodded.
I was bold, Lord. I wanted an experienced man as apothecary. Chiron.
Not Chiron, boy. Forget about him. Chiron won't be joining a squad again.
Lord, I heard what happened on Kozan. All of Redates' squad lost, except for Chiron, the apothecary. It surely wasn't his fault.
Sadon turned and looked out across the moonscape.
No, it wasn't. Men die in war, and Redates' squad fell valiantly. Chiron was lucky to survive, and I know for a fact he wishes he hadn't. I'd like to have had him back in a squad quickly, but it is more recent events that bar him from consideration.
Lord?
Look elsewhere, Priad. Look to your heart. I know you'll make a good choice.
Thank you, Lord. I will try, but...
Priad's voice trailed away. As silent as a phantom, the ancient chapter master had gone. Brother Natus grunted and shifted his weight onto his left leg as the petitioner put his full force into the swing. The nokoi he wielded whistled over Natus's right shoulder, and Natus pivoted around and brought his own staff up skillfully into the petitioner's ribcage, doubling him over and dropping him onto his backside on the straw mat. Xander and Andromach laughed broadly and applauded. Natus grinned and leaned over, reaching out with his augmented left arm to pull the gasping petitioner to his feet.
Nice try, Natus said, but your reach was wide, and it left you open.
Sir,
the petitioner nodded, limping back to the edge of the mat where the other petitioners were waiting. At least three of them were sitting, nursing bruises and contusions. Priad stood with Pindor, Cools, and Cylon on the far side of the sparring hall. Like all the Iron Snakes in the chamber, Damocles veterans and aspiring initiates alike, he wore a flexible body glove of dark grey hide, his feet, hands, and head bare. The body glove was form-fitting, sculpted to the contours of the powerful physique beneath. Rubberized studs covered the lumps of cutaneous plugs and dermal implants. Only Lexicanium Phrastus was robed. He wore a long grey yukoi of silk, edged with white and red beading, and sat on a stone vaulting block, making notes on a data slate.
"Next man,"
he called, flicking his fingers. The next petitioner in line stepped onto the mat and picked up the discarded nokoi. 2 meters long and made of bronze, the nokoi was a practice weapon designed to simulate the weight and balance of a sea lance. There was no blade tip, but one end flared slightly into a blunt, spatulate flatness.
"Name?"
asked Phrastus.
"Diognes,"
said the petitioner. He was tall and slender, his hair tied back behind the crown of his head in a short knot.
"Begin,"
said the Lexicanium. Natus settled into a casual crouch, legs planted wide, the classic lauscrae or deck stance that kept a man upright on a wake-rocked boat. He held his pole across his chest, upper tip angled out to deflect, lower pulled back ready to snap out an underhook from the waist when it was least expected. Diognes, the petitioner, took up a similar but less stooped stance, and they circled. He'll soon be knocked off his feet, Priad thought. His center of balance is too high. Diognes swung his pole tip down at Natus, who deflected it with his own raised tip, immediately pushing out the underhook in response. But Diognes blocked the hook with a bell-like clang of metal, swept in with his upper tip, and, as Natus parried that, deftly slid both his hands to one end of his nokoi and hooked it like an oar behind Natus's knees. Natus landed on the mat hard, his breath barked out of him. Now it was the petitioner's turn to clap. Andromach and Xander laughed again.
"Good,"
said Natus grudgingly, as the petitioner helped him up.
"Again?"
asked Diognes.
"My turn,"
said Cylon, stepping forward onto the mat and taking the nokoi from Natus as he withdrew. Next to Priad, Cylon had the best record of any in Damocles when it came to worm hunting, and he was a master of lancecraft. Priad wandered over to Phrastus's side as the bout began.
"Interesting," said the Lexicanium.
Diognes was the first petitioner to have won a bout against the members of the Damocles since the session had begun that morning. Cylon moved in without formality, barely seeming to prepare himself. He spun in with a flurry of blows, high and low, that had the younger man lurching back across the mat. The air rang with the strokes of bronze on bronze. Just when it seemed he was going to be driven across the red out-of-bounds border around the edge of the mat, Diognes rallied and threw a series of thrusting strikes that forced Cylon to first duck and then back off. What marked the petitioner's ability particularly was his unorthodox style, Priad noticed. Diognes frequently changed grip, so that many blows were readdressed and swiftly reversed, and he wasn't afraid to swing the nokoi one-handed, increasing its reach. Taking one hand off the staff in a bout was frowned upon, of course. Half as much grip, twice as much likelihood of having the weapon knocked from your grasp. Diognes blocked 3 expert thrusts from Cylon, and then tore in with an underhook so well-timed Cylon had to leap back to avoid having his ribs broken. But he was wrong-footed. Diognes drove on the advantage, scything his pole out one-handed to clout Cylon around the head. But Cylon had fainted. He brought his pole up and intercepted Diognes's wrist. The petitioner's nokoi went spinning away through the air. Cylon then butted Diognes in the chest with the tip of his pole and dropped him onto the mat. There was general applause.
"Bout, Cylon," said Phrastus.
"No,"
said Priad. The applause died down. Priad pointed to where Cylon's left foot was squarely planted in the red border.
"Out of bounds. Bout Diognes."
Cylon cursed at his own error good-humouredly and helped Diognes up.
"There's one,"
said Priad to the Lexicanium.
"Mark him down."
Chapter 3
"He killed Brother Crates of Phocis' squad."
"He what?" Priad snapped in disbelief.
"Lower your voice, brother. It's not a popular topic in the chapter house these days. Chiron's disgrace has astonished everyone."
Priad couldn't believe what he was hearing. He stood with his old friend, Brother Sergeant Strabo, of Main's squad, in the atrium of the chapter house temple, just at the end of twilight prayers. The columns of the portico rose above them, entwined with acanthus and bas-relief worms. In the alcove stood proud Kuroi statuary, hewn from marble and faience. Priad was almost choking on the scents of the smouldering incense. His nose just wasn't used to such broad, unfiltered odours.
Radetes, Phocis, and Thebes were deployed on Kozan, so I heard,
Strabo whispered.
The arch-enemy was there in force, protecting some foul shrine or other. Radetes' squad was wiped out, except for Chiron, and Phocis took some casualties before Thebes managed to turn the day and destroy the foe. They shipped back here with the wounded.
And?
2 days after they got back, Chiron walked into the apothecarium and put his bolt gun to the head of Brother Crates, one of the wounded from Kozan, just like that.
But why?
Strabo shrugged.
They say Chiron claimed Crates was an instrument of the warp, and that he was protecting the chapter. But there was no proof. It seems more likely that Chiron's mind had gone, the loss of his squad and everything. He's been locked away, raving, so I hear. There may be a trial, but more likely just Uthanar.
Priad shook his head. It all seemed so unlikely. Chiron was one of the most level-headed and respected apothecaries in the Iron Snakes. To lose his mind.
You wanted him to take Memnes' place?
Yes,
said Priad.
I'd leave it alone, brother. Look elsewhere. Chiron is no longer of the Fratry.
After the evening bell and a brief break for nourishment, the routines of combat practice recommenced. Damocles' squad returned to the sparring hall to put some more petitioners through their paces. Diognes was a certainty in Priad's mind, and there had been two others with promise. Now, in the evening session, two more performed well, especially a thick-set youth called Akon. Lexicanium Phrastus had also brought one of his suggestions for apothecary, a blunt, grey-haired man called Psychon. Priad didn't take to this Psychon much, though it had less to do with the man's bearing and more to do with Priad's state of mind. Chiron was going round and round in his thoughts. He'd known and admired Chiron since his own days as a petitioner, and indeed had been intending to try for Radetes' squad when Raphon called him to Damocles. The selection to one of the chapter's most prestigious squads, one of the notables, had shocked and honored him. Priad had not then recognized his own worth. Only afterwards did he discover that he was one of the top petitioners of his year, and that several squad commanders had argued over him. Priad had been unusual in that he had not joined the Iron Snakes with any burning ambition for advancement. Many of the petitioners dreamed of induction into Scipio, or the Terminator Elite. For Priad, it was enough just to be an Iron Snake. A place in one of the standard tactical squads, like Radetes, would have been more than enough for him. With hindsight, he wondered if that very lack of ambition had got him to where he was. Perhaps the chapter commanders noticed him because he had been more concerned with solid warcraft and service than on promotion or glory. It was certainly what he had seen as appealing in Diognes and Akon. They came to the mat with none of the strutting bravura of others, and those others usually left the mat on their hands and knees. Priad conducted the last few bouts of the session himself. He tried not to take out his exasperation on the poor fools who came up against him, fumbling with the nokoi as if they'd never held one before. He tried to remind himself that every one of these men had taken at least one waterworm single-handed. They were Ithaca's best. Priad left them gasping and spitting blood on the mat. "That's it," Priad called, and the group broke up. He handed the nokoi to one of the petitioners to return it to the wall rack. Phrastus came over.
"I don't think I have to ask," the Lexicanium began. "Unless you've got something better to show me tomorrow, sir, my choices are Diognes and Akon." "Good choices, I believe," said Phrastus. "At your word, I'll confirm the selection with Captain Phobor and then prepare the induction rites. They will be Damocles by the end of the month."
He paused.
"About the apothecary. His induction should take place at the same time. Let me meet both candidates here tomorrow at 7, and I'll give you my choice after that. Bring the inductees, too, Diognes and Akon, and the others we have marked as possible. I'll review them all one last time, to be sure."
"There is still time tonight, Brother Sergeant."
"Tomorrow, sir, please."
The Tholos lay beneath the chapter house, founded deep in the rock crust of Charybdis. A punishment blockhouse, it was, thanks to the meticulous discipline of the chapter, seldom used. Its most common residents were prisoners of war, held pending interrogation under the watchful eyes of the chapter wardens. Phibos, the Knight's duty chapter warden, was a grizzled veteran who had lost both legs and an arm on Kinzia 5 decades before. He wore a long, grey beard and tied back hair, and his mechanical carriage grumbled as it carried him down the cold stone passage.
"This is irregular, Brother Sergeant," he complained.
"But permitted?"
"Yes, I suppose. Do you have a reason?"
"Do I need one?"
"You're the leader of Damocles' squad, brother." "No, you don't."
Phibos paused and tutted, shaking his head at something.
"Has he said much?"
"You're joking," Phibos replied.
He tutted again and yelled,
"Shut up, in the name of the Primarch!"
Priad frowned. He had heard nothing.
"He's raving, raving night and day,"
Phibos said, moving on.
"You hear that?"
Priad couldn't.
"You won't get any sense, and don't get too close to him either."
Phibos stopped in front of a heavy bronze door and slowly unlocked it, using the chain of keys around his scraggly neck. The door swung open to reveal an inner cage door, and beyond that, a gloomy cell containing Apothecary Chiron.
"There,"
said Phibos.
"Raving, like I said."
Chiron wasn't raving. He was seated at the back of his cell, silent, staring out at the open door with intense eyes. His face was bruised and purple around the nose and cheek.
"Leave us," Priad said.
"Don't be too long, brother,"
Phibos answered and trundled away.
"Priad?" "Brother Chiron?"
"No brother now, I'm afraid," said the older man. "I am cast from the Flattery."
"Why did the chapter warden say you were raving?"
asked Priad, approaching the bars.
"Am I not raving? Am I not hurling abuse and torrents of blasphemy at the cage?"
"No."
"I see. That's what most men think I'm doing."
"Why?"
"Because the..."
Chiron paused.
"It doesn't matter. I'm grateful you see me, and not a deranged monster. But there's no point trying to explain it to you. It wouldn't do any good. And they'd just claim I was trying to deceive you."
"I..."
Priad began, but didn't really know what to say.
"Let me ask you a question," said Chiron. "Why have you come?"
"I couldn't believe the stories. I wanted to see for myself."
"I'm a curiosity now, am I?"
Priad shook his head.
"I didn't mean it like that. Damocles lost Memnes on Ceres. I was hoping to induct you as a replacement. My choice has been blocked."
"Memnes. Dead."
Real sadness clouded Chiron's wise, swollen face.
"Then we have both suffered our losses this season."
"Radetes will be mourned. Brave brothers all."
Chiron rose to his feet, but did not approach the bars.
"Crossfire. In a gully. Dead, all of them, in less than 6 minutes. Only some cruel chance spared me. Stray shots brought down the gully wall, and I was buried in rubble. The impact broke my cheek and nasal bone, as you can see. The arch-enemy thought I was dead, too."
He fixed his stare on Priad.
"I wish I could have done more for them. More than just dig their progenoid glands out of their cooling bodies, one by one."
"You did all you could."
Quietly, Priad was trying to goad Chiron. If the loss of his squad really had snapped his sanity, these raw questions might expose that and convince Priad. But Chiron remained calm.
"Have they decided on a trial?"
Priad asked.
"No. I have asked for Othanar. It is set for 2 sunsets hence."
Othanar. Trial by worm. The worst fate a man of Ithaca could undergo. Left alone and unarmed on a stilt rock, he would face the worms as they were summoned. If he was alive at the end of 6 hours, his guilt was determined. The water worms would not touch the tainted. If they took him, he was one of Ithaca's, and his innocence would be celebrated in funeral songs and grief rites.
"May they take you cleanly and quickly,"
Priad said.
"Thank you, brother."
Priad turned to leave and stopped.
"If you are facing Uthanar anyway, tell me."
"Tell you?"
The truth of it as you know it.
The truth of it, eh?
Chiron sat down again.
Aren't you afraid I'll taint your mind?
Just tell me.
A demon, Briad. A thing of the warp. It was on Kozan, in the air, in the foliage, haunting us and directing the enemy beasts. It orchestrated the massacre of Redates' squad. But it was a cowardly, feral thing. When Thebes' squad overran its minions, it fled. And it hid.
Where?
Where? In Brother Crates. It was inside him when they brought him back. Wounded. No one could see it. No one knew it was there. It blinded them all with its demon glamour. But I knew it was there.
How?
I could smell it. I'd been close to it, remember? It had passed right by me after the massacre, believing me to be dead under the rockfall that smashed my face. I will not forget the smell.
What smell?
Chiron looked up at the cell roof for inspiration.
It has no equivalent. Once you smell it, you know it.
And that scent was on Crates?
Yes. It wasn't Crates anymore. It was that thing, cackling and jubilant, to have been brought inside the chapter house, ready to strike at our heart. That's why I took my gun to poor Crates.
At least you can go to the worms knowing you stopped it.
No, Briad,
said Chiron, his face alarmingly serious.
It's still here. I killed Crates, but I didn't kill it. Like a fool, I used a gun instead of flames. It's moved on, into another host.
Now Briad felt uneasy. This did seem like mad talk to him.
I haven't smelled anything.
Of course you haven't. It's gulled the whole chapter house. But it's still here. Be sure of that. Tricking you all.
Phibos reappeared suddenly and slammed his baton against the bars.
Cease your raving, scum!
He shouted, though Chiron's voice had been low and soft. The old chapter warden turned to Briad.
Haven't you heard enough?
I think I have, said Briad.
The hall of the Balneary was quiet and dark, lit only by the lamps along the inner colonnos. The main bath pool was 50 meters square and filled with sacred seawater imported from Ithaca. Briad stripped off his body glove and dived into the water. He swam a lap or two hard and then floated on his back, looking up at the starlight filtering in through the circular window in the domed roof. He suddenly realized he wasn't alone. Above the soft lapping of pool water against stone, he could hear the faint pat of bare feet on the colonnos. He waited for a call of greeting or a splash, but none came. After a minute or two, he folded at the waist and cartwheeled down under the water. Submarine noise roared in his ears. In the low light, he saw the legs of men moving through the pool towards him on all sides. Briad surfaced. 6 men surrounded him, standing where the pool was shallow enough, confidently treading water where it was deeper. They were the surviving members of Phosis' squad.
Briad of Damocles, said one. You injure us.
I what?
We are wounded by Chaos, and you take Chaos's side.
No. Why would you think that?
We know you spoke with Chiron,
growled another.
That bastard is warp scum. He slew Crates. He did a demon's work.
Why would you show him pity and talk with him?
Asked yet another.
I showed him nothing. I wanted the truth.
The truth,
snarled a man to his right.
You would scorn Phosis' squad so? Asked the warrior next to him.
Brothers, I have nothing but respect for Phosis' squad. Why have you come here like this? What is your intent?
Briad tensed. Inter-squad fighting was unheard of in the Iron Snakes, but he knew that in some rowdy chapters, rivalry sometimes led to brawls between brothers. Was Phosis's honor so damaged they had turned on him now? At the least, this was intimidation.
Speak, Briad persisted. What is your intent, brothers?
Enough!
A strong voice echoed from the poolside. Priad squinted and made out the tall shape of Captain Skander, leader of Phocis Squad.
We've said what we needed to say,
Skander announced.
Do not insult my squad again, Priad of vaunted Damocles.
The members of Phocis withdrew, climbed out of the pool, and followed their commander out of the Balneary. Priad was left alone in the shadowy water. Chapter 4. It was just after 7, 3 hours after dawn bell. Priad had rested badly, his mind more troubled than ever. Now he stood in the center ring of a combat mat in the sparring halls, a nokoi in his hands. Sir? Asked Petitioner Akon, edging out onto the mat to face him.
Akon, you seemed to be elsewhere, sir.
As you were. Priad set the pole down and paused for a moment. On the mat next door, Xander was sparring with Diognes. Near the arched doorway, Lexicanium Phrastus was introducing the apothecary candidates Sycon and Ibos to Andromach and Pindor. Down, away, down the length of the sparring halls, Priad could see Captain Skander leading the men of Phocis through hand combat drill. Beyond them, Sergeant Strabo was conducting flamer practice with the men of Main's squad, and Pedo Trebe were exercising other petitioners. Priad's superhuman senses could smell burning promethium, sweat, furs, and, from Phocis, the background taint of salt water from the pool the night before. He had almost told Andromach and Pindor what had happened in the Balneary, but didn't want to be responsible for a squad feud. Shaking the thoughts off, Priad swung his nokoi up.
Let's begin, he told Akon.
They exchanged a few paltry pole-to-pole hits. Priad knew he could block everything the youth hooked at him.
You'll have to do better,
Priad said, adopting the louse grey. His attention was caught by Captain Skander, yelling at one of his troopers while looking Priad's way. Skander glowered.
Sir?
Akon asked, faltering.
Let's begin, I said,
cried Priad, and brought the bronze pole up at Akon's face. The boy turned and deflected Priad's follow-up. Priad circled again and blocked with his nokoi. He glanced sideways and saw Skander was staring at him, as if he wanted Priad dead. Priad fumbled. Light and pain exploded behind his eyes. Taking advantage of the sergeant's momentary distraction, Akon had struck him squarely across the nose with his nokoi.
Sir, sir, I'm sorry.
He could hear the petitioner gabbling.
I thought you'd block. I thought...
Priad got up onto his knees, his head swimming. The boy had got a sound blow home. Priad's vision was fogged, and blood was pouring from his cracked nose, spattering across his chin and chest. There was a fuss of voices around him, and beyond them he could hear scornful catcalls and jeers from the men of Phocis and Main squads. He put his hands to his face. His nose was broken, and his left cheekbone, too. The blow would have crushed a normal human skull.
It's all right, Akon, Priad slurred, spitting blood. It was my fault for not concentrating. You saw an opportunity and took it. I'd have been more offended if you'd pulled the blow. There's no room in Damocles for men who show quarter to the enemy.
He got up, blinking tears out of his eyes, feeling the soft tissue of his face beginning to swell as his enhanced metabolism dealt with the injury. Now he could smell nothing but the iron scent of blood, potent and stifling.
Golden throne, brother! The boy's hurt you worse than all the scum on Idon ever managed,
chuckled Andromach, steadying his arm.
Let me attend the wound, said Sycon.
Priad shook them all off.
Stop fussing over me like pack mothers. Enough!
He could see better now, and the self-sealing mechanisms of his augmented blood vessels, along with the genetic clotting agents in his blood, were already staunching the flow.
I'll go to the apothecarian when this session is finished. Right now, Akon and I are conducting a bout.
He wiped his face with the back of his fist and left a smear of blood across his knuckles. Apart from the stink of blood, his sense of smell was registering nothing. Akon's blow had probably damaged the olfactory augmetics too.
Go, go,
he snapped, waving the anxious Akon back to his starting place on the mat. Blood. And more than blood. Priad realized it suddenly. There was a smell, a strong scent behind the lingering dominance of his own blood. Sweet, yet stale. Soft, yet strong. It was like nothing he'd ever smelled before.
It has no equivalent. Once you smell it, you know it.
The smell of murder, of obscenity, of insanity. the smell of the warp.
Brother Sergeant?
Akon was staring at him, puzzled. Priad ignored him, turning to scan the chamber. Close. So close by. He could hear his own pulse beating in his temple like a drum. Where? Where? Priad started to move, to run. He left Akon standing on the mat. Over his shoulder he yelled,
Damocles, form and cover! Hades spread!
Stunned, reacting, the men of his squad broke from their bouts and conversations and leapt to follow him. One bound took Priad onto the practice platform where Phocis' squad was drilling, who had intimidated him in the Balneary and sent him sprawling. Another half-turned, and Priad elbowed him aside.
Skander!
He bellowed. Captain Skander's eyes were wide in surprise. Priad's knockoy smashed him to the floor. Dazed, Skander had wit enough to roll as Priad's next blow clubbed down. The bronze pole made a dent in the wooden platform. The men of Phocis howled in rage. One made to grab Priad, but he wheeled and smacked the man backwards with the flat of his practice lance. Two more moved in, but suddenly the rest of Damocles were there, striking out, grappling, covering their leader's back. Damocles were all dressed for knockoy drill in grey body gloves, carrying the metal poles. Phocis were all in half armor, exercising with small ukai batons and small bucklers. Priad's men had the advantage of reach and hitting power, but Phocis were much better protected. Andromach and Cylon laid in with their poles, breaking shields and forearm guards. Natus smashed a baton from one man's hand and then caught him neatly on the chin with the head of his whirling pole. Xander, Kools, and Pindor were wrestling with opponents of their own. One of Phocis cracked Natus hard across the clavicle with his baton and was about to do so again when Diognes dropped him with a knockoy flat to the forehead. Priad's attention was entirely on Skander. The captain expertly kicked away Priad's footing, and they crashed together over the edge of the platform and into the practice area occupied by main squad. Priad could hear voices, Strabo's amongst them, shouting for them all to desist. Men from Mains put down their flamers and ran to try and break up the fight. Several found themselves drawn into it. Priad would not desist. Struggling hand to hand with Skander, he was almost suffocating in the warp stink oozing from the man. Skander threw Priad over onto his back and heaved in with his uke. The short hardwood pole shattered against Priad's knockoy, but Skander followed in with a savage kick that broke two of Priad's fingers and sent the pole skidding away across the decking. Priad ducked back and threw a punch that cracked Skander's head sideways. Pain flared up Priad's arm from his broken fingers. Skander undercut and punched Priad in the throat and then broke the edge of his buckler across Priad's reeling head.
Enough! In the name of the Primarch, enough!
Strabo screamed. Breathing hard, Priad paused. For a moment, he wondered if he had indeed gone mad. Rage was pounding in his head. He glared at the bloody-faced Skander. If this was all madness, then he would lose his command, lose his place in the chapter, most likely. Skander was raving at him, oaths and abuse. Priad couldn't smell the warp anymore. He had made a fool of himself and disgraced the squad. He looked into Skander's eyes. There was something there. An afterglow. A shadow. A corona of darkness around the pupils.
Like a fool, I used a gun instead of flames. It's moved on, into another host.
Priad stepped back and bumped into Strabo. His old friend was trying to hold him back and pin his arms. Priad wrenched free and tore the flamer unit from Strabo's shoulder. He swung back, thumbed the toggle. A cone of flame engulfed Captain Skander. He twisted and screamed as he was engulfed. Alarms started ringing. All the fighting had stopped. Damocles, Phocis, and Mains alike, all the petitioners, the Lexicanium, the Pedo Tribe, stood in utter shock, staring at the collapsed human fireball. And at the man who had burned him.
What? What in the God Emperor's name have you done?
Strabo stammered.
Look,
said Priad weakly.
Look.
Something disengaged itself from Skander's burning corpse. A small thing, leathery, flapping, smouldering bat wings as if it hoped to fly away. It shimmered, as if it was made of smoke. Its fingers were tendrils of articulated bone, and it had nothing but 100 blinking eyes for a face. The sound it made chilled the souls of everyone present.
You see it?
Asked Priad.
Yes,
murmured Strabo.
Good,
said Priad, and hosed the demon thing with flame, annihilating it. Chapter 5
I saw it with my own eyes,
Lexicanium Frustus was telling Captain Phobor. The veteran Iron Snake was glaring at Priad, who sat on the edge of the practice platform, dabbing at his nose.
I thought Sergeant Priad had gone mad at first, assaulting the captain like that,
Frustus continued.
But I saw it. A thing of the warp. A thing from inside Skander.
Priad, growled Captain Phobor.
Sir,
Priad said, getting to his feet. The men of Damocles fell in behind him, bruised and bloody-lipped from their brawling. Priad was impressed to see that Akon and Diognes took their place in the line.
There will be questions, Priad. A lot of questions.
Sir.
From what the worthy Lexicanium here says, and the other men besides, you may be exonerated, praised even.
Sir, I hope that what has happened here might assist in the case of Chiron, too.
Phobor paused.
It is too late for him.
Sir?
At Captain Skander's personal request, Chiron was taken to Ithaca at first light. I'm sorry. Uthanar is already underway.
The seas around the Primarch's causeway were raging. White water marisae bloomed around the line of the stilt rocks, and a fierce storm was rolling in from the ocean. Retarion, worm storm. The ferocious squalls that seemed to follow the movement of the marine serpents. Soon, the Soinene, the folding walls of iron, would rise out in the deep waters and come crashing in, kilometers high. I can't go in any closer, the shuttle's pilot wailed. The wind shear will break us on the rocks.
Damn you,
Priad snarled.
Lower then, drop height. You're mad.
Do it.
Look at the auspex in the name of Sadon,
the co-pilot shouted above the noise of the wind and the rain.
Hard returns, coming up from the depths. Craretire!
Priad saw the swirling green shapes on the scanner's dished screen. They were big. Perhaps not Craretire, the giant bulls, but big. 3, 4, maybe 5 of them.
Drop height,
Priad demanded again. The shuttle's turbines shrieked as it came down over the water at less than 10 meters. It was a hunting catch, sleek and long-bodied, that Priad had virtually stolen from the chapter house dock. Priad scrambled back into the cargo bay, where 2 lancing skiffs lay in hydraulic cradles. He ordered Cylon, Xander, and Cools into one, and leapt into the other himself. All of them were still clad in their grey body gloves.
Pindo, Andromach, with me. Natus, man the releases.
Natus hurried to the aft position, pushing past the agitated and bemused petitioners, Akon and Diognes. Priad wanted a good man at the release clamps. A clean clearance was a key part of a hunt run, and Natus knew that craft well. Andromach caught Priad by the arm as he was unlashing the foretethers. The squad's standard-bearer held out his right wrist. It was twisted, broken in the brawl.
Stand out, brother. You're no use to me. You,
Priad pointed at Diognes.
Sir?
Can you hand lances?
Yes, sir.
Take his place.
Diognes helped Andromach out of the skiff and took his place midships, pulling the covers off the lances, racked under the gunwales. Priad looked up at Andromach, Akon, and Natus.
Make sure our brother pilot doesn't fly clear away. We'll need extraction.
Sir,
the trio chorused. A bell clattered.
Drop height,
sang out Natus.
Prepare,
ordered Priad. He dropped down on one knee in the prow of his skiff and looped his hands into the side ropes, pain throbbing from his broken fingers. Behind him, Diognes did the same, and Pindor braced himself for the slim vessel's aft. In the other boat, Cylon, Xander, and Cools duplicated the stances.
Go!
Belly open,
cried Natus, raising his voice to yell over the engine noise and sea thrash that boomed in through the opening hold doors.
Hunt with the gaze of the Primarch and the grace of the Emperor,
Natus yelled. With an experienced, unruffled eye, he watched the wind speed indicator and the shuttle's yaw.
Brace. Hold. Now!
Natus threw the release lever. The skiffs dropped out of the shuttle and fell towards the water. Impact. A swirl of bubbles and a rush of water noise. Priad held on as the skiff inverted, drowning them, and then slammed upright again as the thin, helium-filled buoyancy tanks self-righted them. Kneeling at the back of the craft, Pindor cued the engines as they lurched forward,